Welcome back to the second instalment of this new JD Welsh Premier League podcast feature, where we get to know some of the outstanding people that make this league what it is. Over the coming weeks and months, we'll be getting to know some of the key figures of Welsh Prem past and present. In our inaugural episode, Craig Harrison was in the hot seat sharing fantastic insight into the highs and lows of his career in football. And this week, we bring you an extended interview with Cardiff Met's Dr. Christian Edwards. A former professional at Swansea City and a host of other clubs across the English domestic system, we caught up with the no-nonsense former centre-half to discuss his journey as a player, which was quite storied considering this is a guy who considered himself to only have been able to kick and head a ball quite well. Modesty, we think, but nonetheless, we have a look into it. We spoke extensively also about his move into management and education, and the responsibility of guiding players not just through their footballing careers, but academia too, and how a footballer of all people can become a doctor. I know, bonkers, right? We loved catching up with the Met man, and we know you'll enjoy his story too. We're getting to know Dr. Christian Edwards. So, Christian, thank you so much for joining us for this podcast. It's great to have you with us. I want to start really with what people describe you as whenever I mention they're playing a team might be playing Cardiff Met, or I ask about how Cardiff Met are doing or how things are going there. Everyone always says that Christian Edwards is the great thinker of the game. Have you heard that? I mean, from your expression there, and what does that mean to you to have that sort of description?
Interesting. Yesterday somebody called me standoffish and aloof, and that's the perception they have of me. So for a perception of a great thinker, I'm not so sure. I do think about the game like us all. Probably not as mad for watching games like other managers in the Welsh Premier League, but I certainly think about the game, probably in a different perspective because of my place of work. But yeah, interesting to be known as a thinker of the game. A lot of the managers and the fans in the Welsh Premier League will see me as somebody that's a bit of a ranter and a baller on the sideline when things aren't going my way.
I think it comes from my perspective, when I've heard people say that, I think it comes from the fact that, you know, you've got a core group of about 13 players who've been with you since you've been in the Welsh Prem, and they can play about five or six different systems quite comfortably and things like that. So do you think that's maybe where it comes from?
Possibly, yeah, I think so. As you rightly point, and as you can see on the walls in my office, that I've got about 13 lads that have been with me really from 2010, 2011. And over those years, one of the first things that we have as a club rule is to be able to develop players, both academically and as football people. And development as football players means that they just can't play in one position. You need to try and see them in different positions. And I think a great example of that is Cal McCarthy. I think he can play as a sweeper, he can play left back, he can play left side of centre half, we can play him as a holding midfielder, play him as a left winger, and we can play him as a 10. And probably if you ask any player in the team where's Cal McCarthy's most influence, they'll say as a 10. But he really plays there because we have other players that play in that position. And that's something that's been key for us because, again, coming up against the really good sides in the Welsh Premier League, you just can't have a one system. We've really toyed over the years with how do you conquer the width of and the rolling of TNS's and wingers, and we tried to look at that and analyse that and work on the mistakes that we've gone up against, and we've come up with a system that we believe at the moment fits. But like all coaches and good coaches, the game evolves, and as coaches we have to evolve and move on and be flexible and adaptable. I think as a coaching group and as a group of players and squad, I think we're very adaptable there. And I think where we're very lucky as well is that we get an opportunity to work on those new systems in our British University games. So we'll play a different system every week to see how that looks. And then I suppose where I'm fortunate to others as well is that we have a large number in training, so we can play a lot of 11v11. So that allows us to do that. So it fits with what we want to do and how we see football working. So yeah, it's interesting that we're seen as a thinking team, and in many ways it's a nice way to be seen as a thinking team as well.
And your team's full of energy, they're full of ability, they play quite an expansive game, if that's the term that fits, I guess. Where does that philosophy come from though? Does it come from your days at Swansea or
I look at myself now as a football player, and I never once played in a team that passed the ball, probably because I couldn't pass it. I was a traditional number five that could head it, kick it, got the best out of my capabilities. And when I came into management and we were in Welsh Division 3, and people used to say, you can't play your way out of this division, you have to kick your way out. I thought, no, you can do that. So fortunately for us, we did that. And it's stemmed from there, really, that want to try and get the ball down, because Welsh football, to a certain degree, does get a bit of a bad name of the style of football that's played. And I disagree. I think there's tacticians within the Welsh Premier League. There's managers that get the best out of their players in the Welsh Premier League. And different styles of play suits different games. Now, you can't play football one week as you can to the next, depending on the context. So it's really important that you are able to be adaptable in that way. And the philosophy of play, I wouldn't hate the term expansive. I think we can be free-flowing at times, but if you look at our record in the Welsh Premier League, I think one thing that stands out for us is our ability to keep clean sheets, and that's one thing I pride myself on. Even though this year we're not in the top six, I think that in our last 11 games we've had 8 clean sheets, which that is in all competitions as well, which is huge. I think we played Barra a few weeks ago and said that was, I think they told me to, I said they only had one clean sheet all year, which for me, clean sheets win you football matches. So it's really important for me that the bedrock of a team starts with its goalkeeper and back three, back four, whichever way you want to play, and then you build forward.
And just to touch on Swansea a bit more, you've had obviously numerous appearances there. You've come through the youth system. Two questions, really. It must have been very special for you to be able to do that and come through a youth system to such a big club. And secondly, since then, obviously Swansea have gone on to do fantastically well. Could you have envisaged that when you were there, that they'd go on to do so spectacularly?
No, not really. I think I'm very fortunate that I live in an area that is surrounded by Cardiff City fans, and I wanted to be different. I've always tried to be different to everybody else, so I wanted to support Swansea. When I was a young kid growing up, everybody supported Neath in rugby, I supported Llanelli. So, yeah, Swansea was my team, and I was very fortunate as a young lad to go there and play in their signets, as it was called, in their under-15s, under-16s, and that's where I started, and I was fortunate to go on and play for the football club, captain the football club as well. So it was fantastic to honour to play for the team that you support. And Swansea was a different team back then to what it is now and in its current state. We were a team that played the Vetch, the iconic, majestical Vetch field, which for me was outstanding, one of my favourite stadiums, even though I was fortunate to play in some big stadiums, which had that aura about it. Teams didn't like going there. And I just loved every moment of being at Swansea. It was fantastic. And in doing what they do now, they've probably lost a little bit of their values and beliefs of what it was like to play for Swansea back there. As the drive into Swansea, past Port Talbot, into Neath and Baglan and around, it epitomises hard work. It epitomises what it takes for real people to live in a city that's hard working. And probably at times it's lost that little bit of identity, and I'm not trying to be too critical, but that's what it took to play for Swansea back in the day. You didn't need to have tricks. Your best trick was your availability to play. Playing meant you're adhered to the values of the football club that was instilled in my time by Frank Burrows and Billy Ayres. And if you were able to adhere to good, strong values, beliefs, then you stood a chance at Swansea. And that's one thing I've learned and taken with me throughout my career, both as a football player and now as an academic, that sticking to basics, doing the hard work.
It's written on your door, isn't it? For those who don't know, just tell us what you've got on your door here.
On my office door, the ability gets you through the door, but character keeps you in the room, and I've always been massive for that. I've seen many a football player, both here at the university and within the professional game, have ability. So much ability, more ability than I ever had, but their character at times lets them down, and the will to want to work hard they don't have. And unfortunately, you see some of those people now sat in corners of pubs telling you that they could have done this, they could have done that, and I don't really feel sorry for those type of people, because really, if you've got that ability, you should be executing that ability. And that's what it was like for me, and I've taken it through and still try to instill it here at the university. At the university, we're very privileged to have what we have, and some of the players that I have, or a lot of the players that I've had, I say, are fantastic players. But one thing every single player has that currently plays in the squad and has done over the years has the ability to remind of grounded values, of being humble, and that's what they are. And I think that's a great strength in a person, and not just in a football player.
And who were the? You mentioned a couple of figures there in particular, but who were the biggest influencers in your playing career, whether they be at Swansea or anywhere else? Who do you look back on and go, wow, they had an effect on me?
Yeah, Frank Burrows, definitely. Frank, I believe, in his early 80s now, it's a bit of a legend at Swindon Town in his day, managed Portsmouth, managed Cardiff City, but it was really his time at Swansea in the early 90s, 91, 92, where he kind of signed me as a young apprentice, signed me as a pro in 94, and probably back in the day would have seen as favouritism, the golden child as such, but Frank really put an arm around me and saw something in me that others didn't and looked after me, and I'll never forget him for that, because he's lasted long in my memory. And as I've always travelled with Frank in mind, wherever I've been, thinking about what you need to do to succeed. So Frank was a big influence, and then Billy is really another person, and unfortunately he's passed away. But Billy, a very hard man from the northwest, northeast, a school teacher by trade, was a Blackpool legend, and he had that ability just to stare at you, and when Billy stared, he didn't move. And again, just the way he conducted himself, both in and around the training ground and away from the training ground, he's a gentleman. And I just didn't think it took much to do what they did, but what they did, they had added value. It doesn't take much to say please, to say thank you. It doesn't take much to go that extra bit. And one thing I've always spoke to the players, that hard work for me to give me in football shouldn't be something you ask for, should be give me. Fortunate for me, I have that with our football players at the club. They give up a lot of time and a lot of effort, to sacrifices to be in pre-season on July the 1st and train every day in the first week and 3 to 4 days the second week without getting paid. A lot of them away from their families. So, you know, whilst we don't pay them at all in financial way, we thank them a lot for what they do for us, with the commitment that they give us, and it's phenomenal that what the boys do. And I think Frank Burrows would be very proud if he kind of coached on Billy, if he coached these lads, because they would see the hard work that they give, and that's all you can ask for.
And you're our first guest who has senior international cap to their name as well. I mean, you talked earlier and said, you know, I wasn't a good passer and this, that and the other, I was just a hard worker, but you've got an international cap, you know, that must be incredible for you.
Yes, probably didn't deserve the cap at the time. Got it off the back of a cameo appearance for a couple of minutes away at Switzerland.
On for Chris Coleman, I think.
Yeah, came on for Chris Coleman. I think we lost the game 2-0. I'd been in and around the squad a couple of times, and I was a young lad coming through, and back in the day, that's what they tended to do, was take a couple of young lads with them. And on this particular trip, I can't even remember if it was a friendly or if it was a competition game, I was asked to travel, and I did that, and I came on and got that cap. And like I say, I probably didn't deserve it. A couple of years later, when I was in the Premier League with Forest and in the Championship with Forest, constantly playing, I probably deserved caps then, and I didn't get them, but that's the way it is, and that's the way the luck was given to me. But yeah, I've got that cap, it can't be taken away from me. It was an enjoyable experience, and it was something that as a young player everybody would like to do, not everyone's fortunate enough to do, just unfortunately always labelled as that one cap wonder, which you try to shrug off if you have to.
And then in 2007 you came to the Welsh Premier League for the first time with a historic club, Aberystwyth. What was it about the Welsh Premier League at the time that you thought you wanted to step into that, and why Aberystwyth?
Do you know what? I'd not even never ever been to Aberystwyth in my entire life, and I'd just retired that year, 2006. I'd retired in the May, got married in the February, retired in the May, and that summer I decided that I was going to go to university. Something I wanted to do if I hadn't been a professional football player, something I would have done at 18. So I decided to come to Aberystwyth, and I was on a course in the same year as David Hughes, Barry Town, currently at Aston Villa. And I knew Dave from our playing days, and he said he had a friend at Aberystwyth called Brian Coyne, never met Brian, and he needed a coach / centre half. I said, all right, okay. He said, you fancy? I said, no, I'm watching the Autumn Internationals. I said, I need a break. I said, I've longed to watch the Autumn Internationals. I'm going to watch New Zealand, and I want to watch those games. And me and my wife, we had, long before children, we had tickets to go and watch the Autumn. And I wanted that in my life. I wanted to, because rugby's my first sport. I've always loved rugby, fortunate to play, to be selected for Welsh schools back in the day. So I wanted that rugby life back, and those Saturdays. And it was after the Christmas that the Autumn Internationals had gone and the Six Nations were fast appearing. Dave said to me again, Coyne needs a centre-half / coach, do you fancy it? And I was like, yeah, I've been out of football a little bit now, yeah, I don't mind. And then I said yes, and I met Brian in a hotel in Cardiff, and such a charming individual, a lovely man, a lot of time for Brian. Did a fantastic job at Newtown, and I didn't know at the time, but and came to Aberystwyth, and very, very welcoming. And I went there, I drove there, and I thought, wow, this place just never ends. How the hell do you get to Aberystwyth? And it just took it forever to get there. And I just, all of a sudden, just had this affinity with the club. It was brilliant. I had a fantastic 4 years there. What I liked about Aberystwyth the most when I was there was very much What I've been speaking about is the values, beliefs and the hard work of individuals, and that epitomised Aberystwyth. You had Big Freddie and Iron, you had Paddy, you had Barry Morgan, Sean James, Richard Morgan, Gary Lewis. The core of the football club were Aberystwyth through and through, and they were brilliant, and I think that was a driving force behind Aberystwyth at the time. And forgive me if I've left any of the lads out there, that Luke Shawburn, another one, Jeff Keller, who was just coming through, and they really epitomised what it was like to play for Aberystwyth at the time. And there's only a few travellers. I think there's myself, Gareth Hughes from Radaway, and Stu Roberts from ex-Carmarthen to ex-Swansea. And we travelled, and we, all three of us, we travelled because it was Aberystwyth, and it, whilst it was 3 hours away, when you got there, your time there was fantastic. And the club was brilliant. You had the guys there, Jock, and as a chairman and all the other individuals, just made it a really special place. And the groundsman, just to tease him about the state of the pitch, and in there with making the teas and the cakes. When I go back now, I was the first people I head for, those people, Phil and his wife in the catering, and tell him the pitch looks even better than when he used to do it. Obviously he understands why now, and it's just a brilliant place to be. And the reason why I ended up leaving is just 4 years of travelling back and forth twice a week really took its toll. And I remember once I'd found a new way to get to Abba. There was hundreds of ways to get there. I was searching for that the shortest route, and I found a new way. And this one time, getting there before training, I'd had a day of study at university, and I had to pull over in the lay-by to sleep, and I was knackered. And I just thought to myself, this is it, I have to stop. My children were growing up. I think all three of my children had been born, and they were growing up fast. My wife was left on Tuesday pretty much all day without a car at the time. Poor student, couldn't afford two cars back in the day. And then Saturdays all day. The home game was Aberystwyth. They were long days, and my wife sacrificed a lot for me to be away. And the way I always kind of like to do things, if you're going to leave a place, you have to leave the place in the way that you joined. And I didn't leave in acrimonious circumstances. I spoke to the club. I handed the kit back that they'd given me and thanked them for my time. And I said, it was a privilege to work at the football club, but my time is up. And I just started taking over at Cardiff Met then as well, so I knew that I had a new challenge, I knew that I had a new focus. And you can't give 100% to lots of things, you're going to end up kind of coming up short somewhere. And I knew my time at ABBA was up, and it was a privilege, as I said, to have been there. Still to this day, I go back and I still speak to the people that are there, probably less so friendly grounds these days, because we're always a challenge between ourselves and ABBA. But a fantastic experience, and one that I can look at back with fond memories and say that it's given me a little bit of grit of what is needed to survive in the Welsh Premier League.
And that was a time where you started another important journey in your life, which was going from being a defender to being a doctor. I'm really curious about this, because I'm sure you could have just sat back and gone into coaching another way. Why education?
It was incidental in many ways how I arrived at becoming a doctor. But as I alluded to earlier on, I always wanted to study. I had to make a hard decision at 16. Do I leave school after getting my GCSEs and good GCSEs and leave behind A-levels to go and pursue this dream of being a professional football player at Swansea? And knowing the percentage that make it as a football player is a big chance. But also that opportunity doesn't come around very often. So I took the opportunity for the advice of my mum and dad and my grandparents about going there, and I did it. I did my A-levels then while I was studying at Swansea, and I got those A-levels. So the bookworm as such has always been in me, although those at Forest and probably at Bristol wouldn't have seen that in those middle to late 20s when I was a bit of a lunatic, and that's where Swanee probably lived more those days than Swanee lives these days. That's my nickname. And I arrived there at the university, and I wanted to be a PE teacher. Just wanted to get in, 3-year degree, teacher training degree, and out, become a PE teacher. But I had a fantastic individual at the university, Professor Robin Jones, a little bit like Frank Burrows, a little bit like Billy Ayer, took me under his wing. Really, even to this day, Robin's always looking out for me. He's part of our coaching setup here at the university. And he said that I have the ability to do a master's. So I did the master's, and midway through the master's, he said, if you want it, you can do a PhD, but with a PhD, it takes hard work. And he knew I was up for hard work. And he gave me a challenge, and I bit at that challenge. And 4 years later, my PhD was completed. Went through the Viva, most nerve-wracking thing I've ever done in my life. It was scary. Three professors from around the world grilling around a table about your own work, and you're meant to know about it. And I did it, enjoyable experience. And then, the doctorate came. So it became from defender to doctor. Not a pathway that I envisaged, as I said, but a really enjoyable pathway that people still question my football. People say there's no friends in football, just acquaintances. Got a lot of acquaintances in football, but only a small amount of friends, and my friends in football just were shocked. You, doctor, you're a lunatic. I said, well, yeah, I know, but there was, you all knew that, and the kind of, we still laugh to this day, and some still think I'm a medical doctor, and they phone me up, oh, something wrong with my knee. No. I'm not that clever, not that bright, but yeah, it's something I've enjoyed, and it's something I really, at the university I do now, and I've got journals written, book chapters written this week. Myself and Charlie had our first edited book published, so little things to tick off and little things that I enjoy doing that I never envisaged, and it's a new career for me and something I say I really enjoy. Each of us within the Welsh Prem as managers, we've all got our individual lives outside of football and all unique, and mine's no different really. It's unique in a different way.
And I mean, there's, you know, I don't even have to say what the stereotype is about footballers and sort of education. You know what it is, but it obviously exists externally to people who are in to the people who are within the football world, sort of thing. But you sort of alluded to it there, I guess, that people don't quite take it seriously within football either.
No, they don't. And I think you look at the press. Okay, the press tell you that footballers aren't bright. But unfortunately, what the press write about is a small minority. I'm very much embedded within the within education, the PFA. Always looking for players that are leaving football clubs. I do a lot of talks with the PFA regarding players and education, the importance of education. So I know what's out there regarding players. And there's some very, very bright football players within football. I played at Forest with Jack Lester, had a degree. David Prutton had a degree. Ali Gibb, I played at Bristol Rovers, he had a degree. So there are bright football players out there, but we just don't showcase that. They don't shout from the rooftops about it because it's not seen the done thing. But I'm a big believer in that footballers have to be bright. You know, I'm not saying they're mathematicians by a long way, but you're talking about systems, you're talking about spaces, you're talking about plays, you're talking about angles of where you've got to receive the ball from. That's all jargon that is used within the mathematics world. Now, footballers got to be bright. You know, they've got to be able to see something, to be forward-thinking. They've got to have a vision about them. And I believe, you have to be bright. And you look at the managers in the league, and they've got to be bright. Not academically bright. They have to be bright to be successful in what they do. So yeah, it, unfortunately, football in general, but sport to a degree, takes a bit of a hammering when it comes to education. But I think that's slowly turning. I think there's more individuals doing that. I'm currently on the pro licence, and there's myself, who's got a PhD. Eric Ramsey is doing a PhD. Gavin Chesterfield's got a master's degree. Obviously, imagine the Welsh Prem could easily do a PhD.
Ewan's a nucleus.
Ewan with his job, but in the nuclear factory up in the north. You've got Neil Smothers at Carmarthen, head of sport at College Camoid. He's got a master's degree. So there are people out there. And it's just that we don't shout from the rooftops over it. I probably, with myself, is a little bit more explicit. I work at the university, and it's been made more aware that I am an academic. So yeah, there's a lot of the guys out there that have academic backgrounds just choose not to pursue that as I have. So I think it's slowly changing. I think with the way football is these days, and the way these young football players, they know that the fallout rate is huge. The support network there is education. You look around the UK these days, a lot of football clubs are aligning themselves to academic institutions. They see that sport as a driver, so academia and sport go together, so they go hand in hand, and it makes sense that they do this. So I can only see it being like that. You look at USW, and they've got partnerships with, I wouldn't say partnerships, you know, they're heavily embedded with Barry Town and Pontypridd. Swansea University have their own team, but they've got the Swansea University. We've got ourselves as Cardiff Met University. We've got our Cardiff Met football team. We have a women's team. You look outside of Wales and you go into England, you've got Northumbria. They've got a huge football programme in the north, both on a National League programme and a British University championship. Loughborough, exactly the same. There's more and more institutions starting to go that way because they can see that it's breeding talent. And they can see the value they have in giving exposure to the universities.
And how does being a doctor and a lecturer and so on at one of the best universities in the country tie in with, well, managing one of the best football teams in the country?
Yeah, it's interesting because I go from ranting and raving and shouting at Emlyn on a Saturday afternoon to teaching them on a Monday, which is a totally different way of engaging. So it's a challenge, but it's a really interesting challenge and a good challenge. And it, you know, the challenge is to be able to be adaptable, to be able to be flexible. But they're a great group of players. You talk about the nucleus. That nucleus are all our, mostly our postgraduate students, and they're there for a reason. They all want to work. Charlie has come through now. Charlie's got his PhD. He's now a member of staff here. But you've got Bradley Woolridge, Chris Baker, Dan Spencer, those three all undertaking PhDs. Emlyn Lewis looking to probably do a PhD. Adam Roscoe's just finished his Masters. Liam Black's just finished his Masters. Cal McCarthy, Elliot Evans. And then you've got the young lads following through. They're all driven to want to succeed because they can see, probably they look up to Charlie and see how his pathway has taken him. They probably, to a certain degree, they see myself as somebody, a job they might want in the future, working in university, still working within football, gives you an opportunity to be able to still be engaged with football and the everydayness of that, but also being able to teach, which is what they'd all like. The boys are very good at that. I watch some of the players in their coaching on Mondays and Thursdays before we train, and they're really good at what they do. They're really good at, in the interaction. They're really good at their explanations of and their knowledge and how they transfer that knowledge. So they've had a good breeding ground, and I know at one stage they're all going to, I don't want to say fly the nest, but they're all going to leave. And we know that, and it's hopefully then it's how we've made the football club and the university have made them as individuals, and where they go, and hopefully then they'll go on to make good careers for themselves, and I'm sure they will. And that's been great for us then as a football club to say we've put these people, these individuals, these players, these really good men, good starting block parts in life, so that they can go on and develop.
And as a football club, when you started here, where was it and where did you see it could go?
Yeah, as I said, I fell into coaching because the football team were in Division 3 of Welsh football, and those who've been in Welsh Division 3 know it's a tough old place. I talk about hard work and values and beliefs, that's certainly that and some. So it was in a dark place. It'd been probably abused is probably the wrong word, but forgotten about, I think, within the university about sports. Rugby was high, netball was high, hockey was high. Our basketball team at the time was doing very, very well. So the football is kind of neglected, and the chief executive of the student union, Mike Davis, who's become a really good friend of mine, a really good ally within the football, within the university, asked me, would I take over the football team? And when I came here, I'd never even watched a football team play. I never had any intentions of doing that. And I quickly had a search to see where they were. And I looked, I thought, oh, wow, interesting. But then he said, we'll pay for your master's fees for you. So at the time, I think that was about £3,000. So I said, okay, yeah, no problem, thinking this will be fine. And then I took over. And I remember thinking, okay, can I have the keys to the cupboard? So I was hoping this cupboard would be full of equipment, full of nice stuff. And I opened this cupboard door and, oh, wow, there was some rotten old netball bibs. There was some, what I would describe as manky old water bottles, a couple of deflated footballs and a bag. And so there's your stuff. I was like, ah, right. So what am I meant to do with this? It made me think, what have I done? But then I thought, actually, no, this is Frank's way of winding me up here. I'm sure it is. If you're going to cut your teeth in coaching, you've got to start at the bottom. We're not all going to get Man United as a first job or Liverpool as your first job, whatever. But so yeah, it was interesting. I remember starting my first pre-season, and I sent I don't do social media. I'm not very good at that type of thing. So I posted what I would say was the way to do it at the time was a notice on the university's SU board. Well, when I went back to look at the board and I posted what time training was and when it was going to be and the sessions were we going to be doing, I couldn't probably explain in the interview the profanities that were written all over this piece of paper, so I took it as that people were interested. So I turned up anyway, and there was about 11 boys, and all I can say about those 11 boys is that they had a pair of football boots. That's about as close to football players as they were. They were pretending, as far as I'm concerned, what I call show house foot players. They you go to a show home, they have all these pretty things inside, but really they've got no purpose, and they didn't have any purpose. So I set about changing this football team. So if I'm going to put some hard work in here and change it for the better, then the players have to change. And I ended up writing a master's thesis about changing a culture. And as I said within the master's thesis, it was painful, really painful. I knew the players didn't like, and the reason why they didn't like me is because they didn't like the hard work and the change that was going on. And that was the first year. And then the second year, thankfully, this skinny little lad turned up with pointy knees and an unbelievable touch. and something that I'd hadn't seen since being a professional. And I thought, right, this lad is special. You can work with this boy. And then another boy turned up from Bournemouth, Charlie Causby. And then Charlie Causby and this pointy-kneed, skinny little lad called Elliot Evans. They've really been the bedrock of the team ever since. They were brilliant. They really drove what I wanted. They turned up to the training sessions when there was only seven people in pre-season. And I remember looking across to the rugby pitch, and at the time the rugby boys must have had about 40 lads in pre-season. And I asked them to bear with it and bear with me. We'll get it right. We'll get it right. And you know, we did. And we are getting it right. Still not perfect. But yeah, those two boys really from the start. And then from that, you had the likes of Will Fuller, Dan Spencer, Cal McCarthy, Chris Willis, Bradley Woolridge. They came and started to knit things together. And then Adam Roscoe arrived, Emlyn Lewis, what can you say about Emlyn? You know, Emlyn then glued it all together along with Josh Barnett. And they really formed themselves a real family, I would say, within the dressing room. And they've been unbelievable since. They drive everything now at the football club. We as coaches, we do our best to help them, but it's driven by them. It's coaching is, people argue, should be coach led. Absolutely, it's the coach's ideas, but you need a buy-in from your players, and we've got 100% buy-in from our lads. But we always feel also vulnerable as coaches, because we know that the way the players are, the commitment they give us, they could earn so much, much more money. In fact, they'd earn more money elsewhere. But we just hope and believe that what the experience they get here with ourselves, and not to say it's the best experience, not to say it's better than anything you'll get at Carmarthen or Barrytown or Llanelli or Aberystwyth or Newtown or Connors Quay or any of the 12 teams in the World Premier League. It's just a different experience. We hope that is enough to keep them here. We're grateful of that with the players. So yeah, it's a phenomenal place to be. Probably it will come to an end one day for me. When that will be, I don't know. But at the moment, it's just, you know, chasing to be the best we can all the time. It's ironic this year, people speak about setting goals and you need that 30 points. Everyone's obsessed with 30 points in the World Prem. And I became obsessed after speaking to Andy Morrison, and Andy told me, you know, 30 points, you get top six. I went back to the other coaches after Andy told me that, right, 30 points, 30 points. First year, we got 31, I think. The second year, I think it may have been 34. This year, we got 30 to get in the top six. And then everyone tells me, well, it's the easiest route, seventh. Well, why be obsessed with 30 points then if you can get through in seventh? It seems madness. Everyone tells you how, and we've experienced it, how hard it is to be in that top six. Well, if seventh's easy, why don't you get seventh spot? But then you look at what's in the bottom half of the split, that ain't easy either. So it's a real challenge. And you're watching the top six this split, and you're seeing the games, and some really interesting games within that top six. And then you look at the bottom six, and that's interesting itself as well. And I'm thinking, where can we pick up the points? Will we get the points to secure a seventh? And you look at Carmarthen, there could be anybody on their day. Aberystwyth, they can, as they've proven, can beat anybody on the day. The Druids, wow. What Hugh does with them is unbelievable. And again, themselves, I spoke to Hugh this season, and then he said they've been inconsistent, probably because of Europe, the long season they've had. But Druids can upset anybody. So it's difficult. And Llandudno and Llanelli, they're fighting for their lives. So every week they play, it's a cup final. So it's tough, and we understand that. But it's enjoyable tough. And that's why we enjoy it. We're enjoying it. We know it's a challenge. And then we've also got the Welsh Cup semi-final as well against Andy and the boys from Nomads, which again will be interesting for ourselves. And it's just been a really good season. We're enjoying it. For me, why it's been enjoyable is that from large parts, we've had between four and seven of our key players out at any one time. So Gitta Williams, Dion Phillips, Ridian Morgan, Harry Owen probably has come to the fore this year. And this player, like speaking to Gavin Chesterfield recently, Harry Owen's probably one of our most underrated players, and I agree with him. Harry on his day is brilliant, but those boys have got an opportunity to play more. Alex Lang, another one, an opportunity to play more Welsh Prem games this year than they probably envisage, which will hopefully allow us to grow and put us in a more prosperous position, hopefully, for next season.
And you mentioned that at the start of your time there, you found it quite challenging for whatever reason, you know, various reasons. But it did turn out quite well. You know, you had three promotions in 4 years.
I think
a treble. 1 year as well.
Yeah, the problem with us is that we kind of rose too fast. They asked me at the university, what's your plan? I said 5 years to get to Welsh League Division 1. We had 1 year in Division 3. Then we won the treble that year. We won the Division 3. We won the Bucks Cup, the Bucks League. So we got promoted to Division 2. So you're thinking, okay, Division 2, you stepped up a level, what can we do? We aim for promotion. Probably, realistically, we're going to finish 5th or 6th, looking at the teams in the division. We won the league. So now you're in Division 1 within 3 years, and you're thinking, right, okay, Welsh Premier League's next. Is that viable? 3 years previously, it was never on our agenda, never on our radar because of what was needed. And it was in and around that promotion year from Division 2 that the university decided that they were going to take us off the grass pitch and install a 3G pitch with a facility. Now, we never asked for that. And it was something that was the university had planned to do. And all of a sudden, this thing that wasn't on our radar, the Welsh Premier League, was something that really was an option with the new facility we had. We knew we had to pinch a few things here and pinch a few things here, and extra seats, etc., to get up to standards. And I spoke to the university and said, look, this is really an opportunity. And they said, well, remember, Christian, you know, this is not your money. I said, yeah, I know it's not my money. I said, but if it was my money, this is how I'd spend it, and I'd spend it carefully in this way, because we've got a real chance with the group of players that we had. I think Emlyn was a first year. I think Brad Woolridge and those guys were just finishing their undergrads and they were going to masters. So I knew I had them for a bit longer. I said, we could get to the Welsh Prem within 3 years. Well, our first year in the Welsh League Division 1, we missed out on promotion on the final day of the season on goal difference to Haverford West. They went up.
Can you just go into that a bit more? Because I think when you see the situation was that if Haverford West won by 5 or more, it was... That's incredibly unlikely.
Yeah, we'd beaten Goitre. We'd beaten Goitre on our last game of the season, 1-0. And the game, both games were meant to be played on the same day. Us against Goitre and Haverford West against Aberdeen. For whatever reason, I'm not sure, I think the Haverford West game at Aberdeen was called off due to the weather. So it was played a week later. So, because we'd won 1-0, Haverford West knew what the permutations were. Win by 5, and you're promoted. So, a few of our squad chose to go to Aberdeen to watch the game. I didn't. I went with a couple of the players, and we went and sat, I'd like to say coffee shop, but it was really a bar. And we sat in a bar, having a couple of beers. And again, I said, I don't do social media. I don't know how they did it, but some of the players managed to get a feed to the game, or it was a link to some betting app that was going on. So we could see what was going on. And I think it was 3-0 to Haverford West at half time. And you're thinking, wow, they're going to get 5. You know, they are. And they got the 5. So, yeah, disappointing that we didn't go up that year. We always then, from that moment, we regrouped. The season was over, but I called a training session and spoke to the players. It was a training session. It was probably one of our best ever training sessions, and no coaching took place, no running took place, no footballs were out. It was a chat about expectations and the value of what we're about and one goal. And the one goal was we'd played AFC Porth away, and AFC Porth had a really tough season. I think they lost every game that year. I think we beat them 9-0 at home, and we beat them 6-0 away. And we were on, had a corner, and a ball came in, and the goalkeeper had spilled the ball. Bradley Woolridge has never scored a goal for Cardiff Met, and he was on the goal line, and all he had to do was poke it over the line to make it 7. And I don't know what he did, whether he kicked his own foot or he tried to be a dink the goalkeeper. Whatever happened, Brad's staring at me now off the picture on the wall, he missed. And that goal line chance was the difference between promotion and staying in Division 1 for another year. And we always spoke about the one goal. One goal can change anything. One goal can mean the difference between promotion and relegation. One goal can make the difference between being a cup final or not. One goal can be the difference between being top 6, bottom 6. And like I said, that was probably our best ever training session about, I wouldn't say complacency, but taking things for granted that 6-0 was okay. But really, we could have scored 8 or 9 that day. If the shoe was on the other foot, teams wouldn't have given a damn about us. They'd have won and scored 6, 7, 8, 9. And I'm not embarrassed if we can go on and score 8, 9, 10 goals. We've done it in the past. And I say to the boys, wounded animal, put your foot on their throat and keep going, because teams will not, you know, teams will do that to us. And an example, this year, we played Connors Quay away. Everything could go wrong went wrong for us. Players were injured. And we caught Connors Quay on a day where they were outstanding. They were absolutely brilliant. Wignall and Bakari were phenomenal on the wings. And Andy and his team put their foot on our throat and were relentless. They were 4 up, I think, at half time. And Andy was still the same in the last 5 minutes at 6 as he was in the first 5 minutes. That, for me, not just Andy, I just think that's how it should be done. Go and score 7. Go and score. If you've got the ability to go and score 7, go and score 8, then go and do it, because you just never know what's round the corner. It's not his complacency, it's just at times taking things for granted. And I was very, as I said, very limited as a football player. And I tried not to take things for granted, because I knew that if I couldn't head it and I couldn't kick it and I couldn't go into a tackle, then I was probably struggling. But I made the most out of that. So I just didn't try to take things for granted. So yeah, that, like I say, that training session was probably one of our most important, and it's held us in good stead so far. You know, we've come up like Carnarvon this year, probably like Llandudno a few years ago. We've caught a few people by surprise. Certainly in our first year, first six games, I think we had 1 point. The nail was in the coffin.
First win against Llandudno, and then off you were.
Yeah, I remember the first game, Airbus away, and I won't reveal the player's name for Airbus, I don't want to embarrass him, but he turned round. I don't think he meant it in this way. He said, "You'll be okay in this league. You'll win a couple of games." And I remember thinking, only win a couple? Don't take things for granted, which is what he did. We certainly look forward to the return game against Airbus. I think we won 5 or 6 that day. And yeah, we caught everybody surprised that year. We were a great advert. We beat Llandudno away 1-0. Dubious penalty. It was never a penalty, but we got it. Our mercurial McCarthy put the goal in, and which was ironic, really, because Kyle, again, talking about Charlie and Elliot being long-term with us. If anybody epitomises what we're about, is Kyle McCarthy. As I alluded to earlier on about where he plays and what he does, he's a magician with the ball. Fantastic. People don't see that because he lacks a little bit of height and probably a little bit of pace, but if you had a football session, you'd probably get in any team in the World Premier League purely based on football, I believe. And he scored that first goal, so it was nice for Carlos. And then, as you said, we were on a run. I think we were 9 games without defeat. I think we won of those 9, we won 6, drew 3, something like that, and that really catapulted us to the top 6. I think we went as high as 5th, maybe 4th that season. And then we knew that we were close around about Christmas time, and then I think it was just after January, before the splits, if the Druids beat ABBA, then we guaranteed ourselves the top 6. And I remember myself and my wife saying, "Oh, we need to go away for a couple of days." We didn't have a game, so we went up in and around Aberystwyth, not to the ground. We went to a little place outside of Tregaron. For all the Welsh viewers, I think they'll know this, Sally Mally, the children's program. We went to that place because our children were quite young, and then we stayed in the cottage at Sally Mally. No signal whatsoever, and which was nice. So football got away from it. It was away from Caerphilly, Cardiff area. Just went away, took the dogs with us, and just kind of tried to relax, really. Just thinking, not thinking about football, thinking, oh, when we drive home on Sunday, the result will come through and we'll know. But I couldn't resist it. Every 2 minutes I was running around this little cottage trying to get some signal. And I remember we just went out, walked out with the dogs, and it was just getting dark. And for some reason, I don't know how, I managed to get some signal. And we'd seen that Druids had beaten Aberystwyth. That was probably the best dog walk I've ever been on. Brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. No offence against Aberystwyth. To go from where we'd been, as in bottom of the table after 6 games, people already nailed the coffin and said, "Well done, thanks for coming up, but you're just students. You don't really deserve to be in this league." And that was the attitude at the time, and that has changed. To get top 6 in our first season, brilliant, absolutely brilliant. I think we had to go to ABBA, I think, on the final day then, I think, and then we beat ABBA. And that journey back was probably the best journeys we've ever had. And I know they're students. After games, what is said in the dressing room is said in the dressing room. But the journey's home for us. We're always on coaches. I let the boys do what they want, obviously within reason. And they always have their singer songs and they have their beers, etc. But that was, as I say, it was probably one of the best journeys we've ever had home. Just that sheer relief. And I don't think we kind of even thought about the top 6. It was just about the relief that we were playing Welsh Premier League football the next year. We were not going to get relegated, which was something we set out to do. Just don't get relegated. Just finish 3rd, bottom. And if you do that, what a season. But to actually finish 6th and was absolutely staggering for us that season. And we knew where we were short in players and in areas, but it was just brilliant. And then we had that Carmarthen semi-final, and that was, again, a brilliant day. And it seems to be ironic that key players, or the players that have longevity within our team, are the ones that scored the iconic goals that year, which Kyle was the one that set off with the first win at Llandudno with a penalty. And it was Charlie's 92nd minute header off what is those probably last strands of hair that he has now on his forehead, and probably took a few more strands away, and he'll hate me for saying that. And he scored. Doesn't score very often with his head, Charlie. And yeah, it was brilliant to score that. And all of a sudden you're in the Europa League playoff final against Bangor, huge club, steeped with history, to play against those guys. And we beat them in the season comprehensively at home 4-0, but they had the better of us throughout the rest of the season, and probably didn't expect to win that game. But there was a slight chance that we could have. And as the game panned out, we came up short, and we knew we were short, and we lost by the odd goal. But it was just brilliant. There was a real sigh of relief, I think, at the end of that game, to show probably the Welsh Premier League public that we weren't just this group of students, that they were mature players, they had ability. And one thing I find interesting, you go around the leagues, other than Elliot Evans, not one of our players are spoken about. Yet you go to other clubs, oh yeah, that player's good, that player's good, I'd take him, I'd have him in my team, but other than Elliot Evans, nobody would. And I think at the end of that season, the way the boys conducted themselves, I think they earned a lot of respect from everybody in the Welsh Premier League, certainly the managers, I know that. And now a lot more of those players are being spoken about, and I think that is unbelievable for them, for the way they've been, because they could have easily thrown the towel in and said, I'm not bothering with this, every other week travelling to the north, 4 or 5 hours, not getting any money for this, and what are we getting? Nothing. But no, they choose to do it every weekend. As I say, our boys are not contracted, not paid, but they choose to turn up every week, so they obviously, we're doing something right, the group are doing something right.
And you mentioned, obviously, when you came into the league, there maybe wasn't that expectation you were going to do very well, but I want to go back to, you touched on the Welsh Cup there. You had your opportunities throughout your rise to the Welsh Premier League and had some successes against, I think you knocked Bala out 1 year, and you've obviously played against other Welsh Premier League sides. What does the Welsh Cup mean to you, and how important were those experiences in your development?
Yeah, the Welsh Cup is huge. We were in Division 3 when we played Bala, and we were known as UWIC then, before our university changed names, and we beat Bala on the old grass pitch 4-1. Colin was manager. The lad Connolly played for, they had the big striker, something, the Beast, I think his name was.
Yeah.
He played. And I think whatever happened that day, we were going to win. We could have won 9-8. I think we were just written in the stars we were going to win that day. And then we ended up playing Connors Quay in the quarter-final. You know, I had a group of lads, Division 3. Probably, no disrespect to them, great group of lads. Probably wouldn't get in our third team now, other than Elliot Evans. We had a good group of lads that travelled up. We'd tried to do it properly, stayed in a hotel the night before. We lost, I think, 4-0. It was a learning curve for us to say, OK, well, they're Welsh Prem, we're Division 3. Tail between your legs, back down the A470, and well done, thank you. And then we came up against, over the years then, but the way I looked at the Welsh Cup was that getting to Welsh round three was a great financial benefit. And having those finances allowed us to work the team better, more equipment. And whilst I say we don't pay the players explicitly, there's times where you can reward players by saying, at the end of the season, thank you for your efforts, and here's £500 as a scholarship towards next year's fees. And we could do that with that type of money now. £500, well, they're paying their players. You put £500 over the course of a 32-game season, works out to literally nothing. So that's how we, and it was a gesture to us to thank the players, and that's how we used to work the Welsh Cup. So that's why we've always placed a huge value on it. If we played a team in Division 3 in next year's Welsh Cup round 3, we would play our best team, because we respect it so much, and I see the value in the cup. So then we played Newtown, I think a couple of years later, lost in the last minute when Newtown won their old grass pitch. I think it was 2-1 we lost to Chris's team that day. Then we've played Prestatyn, we beat them 4-0 when we were in Division 1. Played Airbus, I think they beat us, might have been 4-2, 4-1, something that day. Came up short that day. Andy was there with Andy Priest, but Andy wasn't there on that day. And then we came up against Connors Quay in the quarter final, and that was a learning curve in itself. Played them, never seen Andy's teams really play, and they gave us a good old battering, but not just battering physically, it was a battering football wise as well. It exposed me to the way Andy works with his teams. They really cut off areas of the pitch that didn't allow us to play. And I made a flippant comment at half time, and Andy reminded me of that the next time I saw him, and we had a bit of a chuckle over it. And you kind of learn to respect the way people do things then. And we've always done well in the Welsh Cup quarterfinals, round of 16, etc. So this year in the Welsh Cup, I'd spoke to the players about, can we go further? Can we breach that team of 2011? That Division 3 team that got to the quarterfinal, that team from 2015, I think it was, or 16, that got to the Welsh Cup quarterfinal. We've got the ability to do it, but can we go one further? And we always speak in the dressing room is that we believe that not many teams beat us, but we always beat ourselves by letting ourselves down in certain areas. That was the challenge going into Bala. We'd never beaten Bala away, and we'd beaten them at home, finally broke our duck last year in the league. We've obviously played them in the cup before, and going away to Bala, conditions were awful. Probably the game was heading for penalties. You could see that with the conditions. And Elliot was awful. And I know he won't mind me saying that. He was awful throughout the game. He did two things right. He scored a goal to 8 minutes into extra time. And with a minute to go of the game in extra time, he put a ball into the corner that really pinned Baller in. And we got off the back of that, the referee blew his whistle up. So the only two things Elliot did right in the game, which allowed us to get to semi-finals. And It's new territory for us. When you see the tie being Connors Quay, TNS, Barry or ourselves, who do you fancy? So whichever one you picked, it's going to be tough, we knew that. I remember we were on the pro licence, myself, Gavin, Scott, and Jay Caton from Connors Quay. The draw was being made on the Monday nights, and we were in a presentation, and one of the things Oshan's a stickler for is no phones at the table. Okay, the phones were under the table for half an hour waiting to see what had come through, and I saw the tie, and I just happened to glance across to Gavin, and he looked at me, I looked at him, we both rolled our eyes. So the tie's unfolded. We've got Connors Quay on the 31st, which my wife's not too happy about. It's my son's birthday and his Mother's Day as well, so a lot of making up to do there. And for my son was disappointed because, well, all three of my children actually have a great affinity with the players at the football club, and they've grown up with them alongside them. Times the boys have looked after them after games, sat on their laps messing around, etc. But my son in particular has an affinity with two of our players, and he idolises them. Recently, or last year, when we're doing, they were as mascots, and our guy, the announcement, asked who's your favourite player to the kids on the pitch, and some kids are saying Ronaldo, some were saying Messi, some would say whoever they are these days, I'm not really sure. And when it came to my son, who'd walked out of the back with his favourite players, who's your favourite player? And he said Emlyn Lewis and Will Evans. All the footballers in the world, my son chooses those two. So on that 31st, the day we're playing Connors Quay, is my son's birthday party, and Emlyn and Will were going to his birthday party. So trying to tell my son that Emlyn Lewis and Will Evans are not going to his birthday party was not an enjoyable thing. So I could, I wouldn't mind having a nice chat with Andrew Howard, head of competitions, to ask why the Sunday, when we could have had the Friday, the Saturday, or the Sunday. But so yeah, and when my son looks up to those two, I thought he may have looked up to me more, but no, he looks up to Emlyn and Will. Two interesting characters, to say the least. So yeah. We've got the Welsh Cup on the 31st of March, which we're looking forward to.
And you've got the first major national trophy, I guess, that this club's won in domestic football in Wales, sat behind you, the Nathaniel MG Cup. That was a fantastic experience to win that in January. But what does that do for a club like yours, and what confidence does it give you as you look to go and maybe win the semi-final tie?
Yeah, allowing us beating Connors Quay in the semis was huge. Because I don't think, of all the times we've played them, I think we may have got one goal against them, two, maybe two maximum. So to go to Connors Quay, play against a very good side, and at the time I was asked who did I think would win the league, and I said Connors Quay. The intensity that they bring to the game, to their play, was huge. And not to say it's not now, but I'm just saying at the time we played them in November, to go there and get a win, Andy said that there was only one team in it, and I beg to differ. I thought we did what Cardiff Met doesn't do very well against Connors Quay, and we kept them at bay. And we got the really lucky goal. I'm not going to disagree with you. We got a really lucky goal, and we scored. So to get the monkey off our back, which was beating Connors Quay, was huge. Confidence boost. So that was fantastic. And then there was this really period then, like 6 weeks before the final, and the form prior to Christmas wasn't great. A lot of key players missing. And then we go into after Christmas, and it's ironic, after Christmas, Will Fuller's back, Charlie Crosby's back, Chris Baker, Will Evans. The squad was together. Our first time all season that our squad was together, and we won five games on the bounce, didn't concede a goal, and the form going into the cup final was outstanding. However, having lost three cup finals previously, so the two Europas and to TNS in the previous year's competition, I knew we were nervous. I always speak about playing. If you play, you win. And that's our motto at our club, I think you can see up there. Like, yeah. It wasn't about playing that day. Didn't matter how we played, just had to win that game. And I think that afternoon, obviously that was at home, the players didn't. I went to bed that afternoon, I was so nervous. There was a real expectation on us to win, and that's not disrespecting Cambrian at all. And they were phenomenal this year, and they were brilliant for the competition. They've been brilliant all season in their league, and I never go and watch teams. Probably my weakness as a manager, I just don't have the time to go and watch teams. For Cambrian, we went and watched them four times because I was that concerned of losing another final, and not because it was Cambrian, just lose another final. So the day was a nervous one. I went to bed, as I said, for a couple of hours to try and sleep off the nerves, and we came to the game, got to Barry, and it was a brilliant occasion. Both teams went at it. We weren't brilliant. Elliot Evans went down with cramp after 70 minutes. Elliot never gets cramp, so you could just tell the nerves had kicked in, and Adam really settled the nerves with a very good goal. Great work from Chris Baker, pressing their defence high, and Adam one-on-one from the halfway, and against most defenders there's only one outcome, and it's generally a goal. So it was good that Adam got that goal. And then, wow, on came the onslaught. They absolutely annihilated a second half. They put us under so much pressure. If I'm being honest, they probably should have scored at least two. But for some reason, great defending. We don't want to slight Cambrian anyway, but probably poor attacking play at times. They chuck the kitchen sink, and then their goalkeeper comes up for a corner. If you could write winning in any particular way, for me, it's you write, you win in the last minute of the playoff final to go up. or you win in the last minute of the of extra time, or the last minute of a game against the run of play. And that's certainly what happened. Sent young Dion on. Dion's that quick, he can catch pigeons, he really can. And we cleared the ball, he got onto a knockdown, he managed to travel with the ball up to the halfway and he squared it to Adam. Unfortunately for Campbell, their keeper had gone up and he's not as quick as Adam and as Dion, and they left their defence 2-1, and Adam had the ability and the calm to shoot from the half, just inside the half. And the Robin Jones shouting, just run into the corner flag. And Adam's put it in, and he's gone, why is he shot from there? Go to the corner flag. And he hadn't realised the keeper had gone up and the ball's hit the back of the net. You know, we've scored the second goal in the night, and there was no way back. And talk about sportsmanship, talk about respect. Dane, the Cambrian manager, came straight across to me and said, look, don't come across at the end and say thanks, you enjoyed a moment. And I thought it was very sincere of him to do that. I thought it was great sportsmanship, showed great attitude, and I thanked him for that. I thought it was brilliant. He allowed us to have our moments. And I spoke to him afterwards and said, look, we've been where you are in this competition and two others, and whilst it might seem awful at the moment, the team will just get better and grow. And if you can keep that team together, you know, they'll do really, really well in Welsh League One. And I think they're showing that year. So yeah, it was really important. And then, you know, the players get to celebrate then, and the trophy. It was important for us that we showcased the trophy, you know, and I know it's sat in my office now, but we took it around the local schools just to show what we'd achieved, to show the young kids that, you know, education's important and you can do this while still studying. So it was really good and a major honour for a university team that 7 years ago was in Division 3. And it's credit to the people, to the buy-in. But it's also a philosophy of a coaching philosophy and a club philosophy with a vision of where you want to go. Now it's searching for the next step. The last thing I would hate to happen would be that we become stagnated within what we do and we end up just finishing at the same level every year. For me, we have to progress every year. Now, I know the challenge then becomes within. I would love to have the ability, as all managers in the Welsh Premier League bar myself, to go out and select players. I don't have that opportunity. Players select us in the choice of university. So that's the challenge for us, is to make sure that we can, in those selecting us, but also recruiting the best ones that we know are around to choose to come to Cardiff Met to study and also to play football. But I'm also aware that Carl McCarthy, Elliot Evans, Adam Rosgrove, all those core group of players you spoke about, you're not going to get a group in a first year ever again like them. They take time to work with. They take time to nurture. Elliot Evans isn't a product that's happened over the last year. Elliot Evans has taken 4, 5, 6 years to help coach, to help nurture. But Elliot's the one that's done that himself. He's wanted to listen. And the same with all the other players. So it's going to be a real challenge. But we've got Gitta Williams. We've got Alex Lang. We've got Matt Neal. Those three first years that have been core in our squad this year. Iridian Morgan, who's a young second year, have been core to our squad over the last, certainly this year and last year, and it's developing those boys into the older boys, really, for the foreseeable future, to see if we can get those boys to stay for 4, 5, 6 years to progress their academic studies, but also to progress them as football players. And that's the challenge for us then as a football club and as coaches to do that.
And I mean, you mentioned a lot of what you said there was about the footballing side of how you develop them, but I think, you know, you clearly have a fantastic relationship with the players and with your staff. You have these boys under your wing at a crucial time of their lives, really. You and your team and all the other academics here, of course, as well, guide them through that time, but you also guide them through a crucial time in football and everything as well. It must mean a lot to you to have that responsibility, in a way.
Yeah, the way I look upon it is that my son, my daughters will probably hopefully go to university one day. If they're not involved in sports at the level that allows them to become professional, they'll hopefully go to university. And I want my children to have the experience and relationship with their lecturers or coaches they have at university that I have with my players. So I think we're duty bound, there's an obligation to look after those boys. I speak to Emlyn's parents, I speak to Charlie Corsby's dad, Carl McCarthy's parents, I speak to the parents on lots of different ways. Gitta Williams' dad's birthday was a couple of weeks back, I wished him happy birthday at Bala. So you get to interact with the parents, but I believe it's our obligation as staff, and we're duty bound to look after the players. They're, whilst we can't control them 24 hours, we know we can't do that. When they're with us, it's important that they do develop. My door has an open door policy. The boys know they can come to my office any time. They know my phone's there to be picked up, to call at any time. They probably don't, because the three floors they have to walk up to the last office at the university, but they know it's open. And I'll have conversations with the players on many, many levels, whether it's from a footballing level right down to little things. And I mean really obscure things you'd never probably expect a coach and player to have, But we do that. And that's not to say that doesn't happen elsewhere in the Welsh Premier League. It's just that we're together a lot. So it's important that they see me as not a barrier, or the other coaches as a barrier, or their lecturers, and we shouldn't speak to them. That we really are what I would call critical friends for them. We're their friends, but we're also here to support and help. And if we need to speak to parents, we can do that, probably in a different manner to some of the staff here that only see them as the people they're with as students. But we see them as students, we see them as athletes. I know I speak for all the coaches. We see them as friends as well, which is unique, I think, in many ways. But I'm glad we have that relationship with the players. So it's important for us that we have that.
And you've published a book with one player recently. A lot of the other players either have, you know, some of them are tutors here, some of them work here, they coach at your academy. You must be hugely proud of them and the way that they've developed from when you had them.
Our philosophy at the club is about, first and foremost, they come to university to study, and we have to develop them as academics, and then football. They go hand in hand for us. So we've got this mentality of a dual career athlete. So we try to develop them as so they can be better for the job prospects at the end, but also make them better as football players. And I suppose Charlie is different to them all. I worked with Charlie as an undergraduate student, taught him in several modules, but you always knew Charlie was going to succeed as an academic. He always had the eye. He was always willing to work. Again, going back to my earlier comments about hard work and beliefs and values, Charlie always had that about his work. And then he could have done a master's degree, but he opted to do a PhD straight away. So he worked under Robin Jones, who supervised him. And then Charlie, you know, he worked really hard. And again, this is what I speak about when I talk about hard work, values and beliefs. Charlie worked in a bar. He worked in the student union shop just to make ends meet, while he could grab things together to tie up his rent, to afford him to live, to get him to where he is now. He could have easily have left us and gone and played for another team and picked up X amount of week to support that, but he knew what he wanted. He knew the environment was good for him. So those experiences of working in a bar in town, the club, the student union shop where he would work in and he'd see different people, gave him a different experience. He then got HBL hours for teaching. And when he completed his PhD, there was a contract, a fixed term contract job for him. He stepped into that role as if it's been what he's been set for life to do. And again, now his work rate as an academic is phenomenal. It's just a shame over the last 12 months or so we haven't been able to see him as much on the football pitch with his knee injury that he's had, and now his ankle injury. But hopefully he'll be fit excuse me, for pre-season. As you say, yeah, we've recently had a book published. That stems from a conference that I looked to set up, that we have a tri-university conference where it was our turn to host. So I set about setting it up, and Charlie helped me do that along with some other staff. And we held this conference, and Cambridge Publishing approached us about, would we like to turn it into a book? And we asked, okay, we've never done this before. Prof Jones has written numerous thousands of books, and you know, he kind of said to us in many ways, you find out for yourselves, I'll be there if you need to help me. So he left us to it, and whilst I would like to say it was all me, it certainly wasn't. Again, Charlie's hard work was the driver in this, and Charlie, like I say, he did all the groundwork for the book. I wrote the introduction, the foreword, I think, or something like that, and Charlie put everything else together. He was the one constantly on the phone to the publishers, if this went wrong, and you know, yeah, we put this together, and it's a really exciting book. And so the front of the book is the picture is our cup quarter final against Connors Quay, and we had a couple of pictures from that game, and we've always liked it and kept it on my iPad for a long time. And me and Charlie spoke, one day we'll get to use that. And it's the first, when the publisher said to me, what cover would you like to have, and me and Charlie went straight away, can we have this? So yeah, that's the cover of our book, and it's quite nice again how we can blend the football in to what we do as academics. So I'm not going to try and plug it in anyway, but it's something, you know, people have bucket lists, whatever to do, and it's something that I can tick off now and say I've got and done. There are no numbers to join up. You don't need crayons to paint in the pictures. It's not that type of book, although I'm sure people will be laughing. It's just an opportunity to showcase what myself and Charlie and Robin and all the players are involved in within their studies. We all read this type of work, and it's nice to be able to conceptualise it in sometimes in football talk and sometimes in other sports, but bring to life what we do on the everyday as when we're not footballers. What we do, we study, we read, and to put into a book is good.
No, absolutely. Look, I think you've had a fascinating journey, and I'm really glad that we've sat down and done this. Obviously, we've got to know each other quite well over a few years, but it's great to sit down and have these conversations. I just want to finish, if I can, with some quick fire questions. Best player you've played with?
Oh, best player I've played with? Well, that's a tough one. You're taking me back now. I've been retired 15 years. I was fortunate, you know, when I played for Forest to some really good players. David Platt, the manager, was probably the best player in the team, even though he was the manager. Ryan Giggs with Wales was phenomenal at the time. You can't really hide away from probably Ryan Giggs, really, can you? When I was involved in the Welsh setup, at the time he was lighting things up, so I'd have to probably say that.
Biggest personality you've worked with? As a player or a coach?
It's all been, well, there's two. Andy Johnson, very good friend of mine from Forest days. Unbelievable character, both on and off the pitch. Probably Emlyn Lewis, I think. Unbelievable. Mad farmer from West Wales, gives his all. Probably why I'm very close with him is because he's like me. He can edit, he can kick it, and he just has hard work, values, beliefs written in him. I think that stems from his dad, William, and his mum, Buddig, both huge personalities themselves. So, yeah, Andy Johnson or Emlyn Lewis, I think, the biggest personalities.
The best moment in your playing or coaching career?
Best moment playing? Probably my first game for Swansea. It was a big thing. Play there was important, playing for my hometown club, captain in my hometown club as well, not my hometown club, but the team I supported. Coaching perspective, winning the Bucks title for the first time, we had never won it. I did it with a group of players that again epitomised what we're about, hard work, values, beliefs. Well, Premier League perspective, yeah, you can't go further away from winning the Nathaniel Cup. A lot of people probably don't place enough value on the cup, but we did and we've won it. I think that will change next year with the Iron Brew on it, so you'll see a lot of people respecting it more. So yeah, you can't really move away from that. Those moments we had before, during and after the game were significant for the football club in moving us forward. So yeah, winning the Nathaniel Cup, I think.
And just finally, the best advice you've been given in your career?
Best advice, get the best out of your capabilities, I think. Really what I've got on my office door, whilst you have the ability to get into the room, make sure your character keeps you in there. If it doesn't, then you're always going to fall short. And I think I try to instil that into my three children and then my 30 children I have at the football club. And everyone's different, but just get the best out of what you've got. And if you can do that, then you can always say you've given it the best shot you've got.
No, look, like I said, thank you very much again. It's been really fascinating listening to you, and I'm really glad we got to sit down and have this conversation. Thank you for having me.
No worries, thank you.
So there we are, Dr. Christian Edwards. A fascinating character, and thank you very much once again to the man himself for giving up so much of his time to speak with us for this podcast. We know you'll have enjoyed that just as much as we did, getting such a fascinating insight into what makes the doctor tick. Now it's your turn to help us out. We've given you two podcasts so far with two fascinating individuals in the league, but who do you want to hear from next? What questions do you want people to be asked? And whose story do you want to hear told? Get in touch, let us know, and we'll get it done. You can find us on Twitter at @WPL_official, on Instagram with the same name, or on Facebook. Just search JD Welsh Premier League. We've got plenty of stories to keep bringing you from the many fantastic people who've been through our wonderful Welsh Prem over the years, but if there's someone you want to hear from and get to know, then please get in touch with us and we'll make it happen. Thank you for listening.